Welcome to the Fundraising Leadership Podcast, where we talk about topics related to fundraising, leadership, management, and coaching for professionals in the nonprofit world. My name is David Langiuli, and I'm here with my good friend and colleague, Margaret Katz-Kahn. Hey, Margaret.
Hey, good morning. And I am super happy today to welcome our guest, Anne Murphy. Anne is the Senior Director of the Division of Business and Engineering at Oregon State University Foundation. She's a leader in higher education advancement and began her journey as a development intern and mentee 25 years ago. She is also the founder of Fundraise Without Fear, which works with nonprofit founders, leaders, and volunteers who know they need to fundraise but don't know where to start. She's an avid backpacker, and she has traveled the world to find great trails, vistas, and waterfalls. Anne, welcome. We're very happy to have you here.
Thanks so much for having me, Margaret and David. It's really nice to be here. I'm looking forward to the conversation.
Good. So, Anne, I'm going to just kind of start with some questions from your blog, which is posted on our site. And you take this interesting perspective about power differentials between fundraisers in three different arenas. And it struck me as I was reading this that in some places, actually, the fundraisers are higher in power, and in some places we're lower in power. And just tell me a little bit about your observations.
Yeah, so I think you hit the nail on the head. It's our ability to navigate that whole spectrum, because there are these moments where if we're not careful, we implement our power in ways that we could always do better. So when we're on the lower end of the spectrum, it's like, how do we bring ourselves up so that we are working on common ground, as we well should, because we are talented professionals doing noble work. And when we have the power and the platform, how do we use that in order to bring our beneficiaries up and do right by them as well? So there's a fluidity to it. And that's what I'm so passionate about, is how do we as leaders navigate that whole spectrum?
Yeah, I was struck by the story you shared in the blog post. I seem to recall it was earlier in your career, going into an office in New York City, the damsel with the ashtray to meet. And your
team. Did you see I used a picture from The Devil Wears Prada? Because
I saw that.
That's what I used in my
awesome
presentation. Yeah.
Yeah. So tell us about what happened there and how you've processed it since.
Thank you. It's such a beautiful question, because it's two very different things. You know, at that point in my career, I was using a BlackBerry, you know, so that dates where, at what point in time this was. This was, you know, 20 some odd years ago. And so I didn't really understand power imbalances. And so I wasn't sure what was going on. When she said to me, if I knew it was just going to be you, I wouldn't have taken this meeting, there was a piece of me that said, fair enough. Like, you're right. I'm not a big deal. And maybe I'm even subpar. That's, you know, the frame of mind that I went into at that point. It was like, I am definitely coming from a place of way lower, you know, on the power, yeah, on the power spectrum. And, you know, I was able to call upon some of my innate skills and a few things that I'd kind of learned, but in that moment, I really did feel quite small, and I was just doing my very best. Mm-hmm. Now, you know, all these years later and lots of reps with this kind of, you know, interaction within the power spectrum, I look back on it and I can say that person didn't have quite the self-awareness that, you know, that a lot of people do. And I didn't need to wonder, am I good enough? Because of course I was good enough. And the way that I process it now is kind of through the lens of, what would I say to an early career professional if they had an experience like that, or they were preparing for something that could go like that? And that has really shifted my thinking. is.
So what would you say today to your younger self?
Good question. What I would say to my younger self is you have prepared. You know what you're doing. You are here to help this individual, and whether they see that or know that is immaterial. My intention and my presence there is the purpose of helping them and helping the organization that she loves so much. And that's it. I'm sovereign. I'm not subject to, you know, mean-spiritedness, for lack of a better word. It's a non-issue. It's not about me. It's about her.
Yeah. It reminded me of the very first ask that I went on, which was with a board member. And we were at lunch, and the potential donor said, you know, like we sat down and ordered our Diet Cokes or whatever. And he said, is there any reason that you two invited me here today other than to shamelessly beg for money? I mean, it was so demeaning. And I would have said one thing, but my board member jumped in and she said, well, of course, there's a lot of other, you know, I mean, she was so diplomatic. And I thought, you know, if I had just been sitting across the table from him, I would say, well, I'd love to talk to you, but this is actually an ask, you know, I mean, I would have come up with a different answer. And, sure. You know, what I love is I don't think there was a right or a wrong, you know, and I love where you're going with, like, you know, you just can't take it personally.
You can't take it personally. I mean, there's like, you could kill them with kindness. You could, you know, you could attempt to turn it around. You could use humor. You know, you can do different things, just leaning on your emotional intelligence for sure. But I think that one of the things that's most important to continue and have a successful meeting is that piece of not taking it personally. Like, it can't be about you in that moment. Oh, you can definitely go process it later. But that's how I've gotten past those weird moments before.
Yeah. Yeah.
Easy to say, hard to do. As I was exchanging with some folks on LinkedIn about this very topic last week, not taking anything personally.
Yeah. Anyway. Easier said than done, especially when you're 20 something.
I think all of us as fundraisers need to have t-shirts printed, you know, maybe a tattoo. Don't take it personally.
Don't take it personally. And I do always tell my early career colleagues is that, you know, you are good enough and you don't need to question that.
Yeah. Is there more to say sort of about that power dynamic with donors?
I think there's a lot more to say about it. One of the things that I'd really love to see in our industry is, and I get asked about this all the time from colleagues, is, you know, how do we manage those boundaries and those conversations knowing that our organizations are going to support us? What is that line? And this has particularly come up in our work in the DEI space of, you know, when a donor is coming to us and sharing their values and their comments that are not in keeping with our institution's values, let alone the fundraiser's values, what is our role in those conversations? And how safe are we if we have a hard conversation with a donor that maybe goes a little bit sideways? Will our organization support us? If that donor says, you know what, I just, you know, we had an example recently where a donor declined an event and then some because the signature on somebody's email indicated their pronouns. The donor said, we don't respond to invitations from people who list their pronouns on their signature. And the question that I got from staff was, how do I respond to that? What does the foundation want me to say? And so I think that we can do even better in our organizations of ensuring to our staff that we are standing behind them. We could train them on talking points, you know, just provide more support than we have in the past. That's what I would love to see, is us stepping up in that regard and creating that safety for our staff.
Yeah. So that maybe there's a power differential between the individual fundraiser, but that shifts yet again, knowing that they have the weight of their organization in support of them.
Exactly. And, you know, in that example, it's like, does the staff member write back and say, I totally understand, thank you so much? Does the staff member write back and say, gosh, we have, you know, does the staff member hand the relationship off to somebody else who doesn't have their pronouns in their signature? I mean, you know, how do we recommend navigating that? And that's, I think development officers are really craving knowing more about how our organizations will support them.
Yeah. So it's taking a stand as an organization and giving some guidance, even if it's unpopular sometimes.
Exactly.
Yeah. And there is a way in to be at the risk of being politically incorrect here. There is a way of also allowing the donor to express that. That's all.
Totally.
That, yeah. So, even though you might not agree with it.
Yes. Yes. We get a lot of that with regard to the perception of the liberalism on university campuses. And we're getting that more and more practice in having those conversations because it comes up more and more now. So some of our really conservative constituents are getting the opportunity to say how they feel and what they think. And we're having really productive conversations about where the university stands on that. And I think we're also becoming okay with, we're not for every single donor.
Yeah.
Not every single donor needs to support us. There are lots of ways for them to make an impact that do align with, you know, the values of higher education. And it just might be that there's another organization out there for them to do that. And that's what we're getting better at. And I'm not saying we should run around cutting ties with a whole bunch of, you know, really generous folks, but it is okay to set them free sometimes, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. As we're talking about, I'd love to just segue a little, because there's something else that you wrote about where the balance of power is the opposite. And that is, you know, as a fundraiser or an organization that has granting power or scholarship awarding power, where suddenly that spectrum is flipped.
Yes.
So yeah, can you say a little bit more about that experience?
Yeah. We've really become attuned to this. And as soon as we started talking about it, we were able to make some changes it's such a positive way in how we connect our beneficiaries, their stories, and themselves personally with our donor audience and individual donors. So what we learned is that in some of our communication about beneficiaries and the opportunity to make a gift, the argument for support, we were telling the students' stories for them without engaging them at all. And what we learned is that the stories that we told, and were the stories that our donors want to hear, right? They're very compelling stories about how a donor can make an impact, but they weren't the student stories. They weren't told in the way that the student would prefer. And we apply that litmus test of, are you talking about this student in the way that you would if they were sitting, you know, one table over at an event? Are you potentially exploiting them? Are you layering on top of it your own perceptions? And so what we were able to do is like look through our publications, see where we made those mistakes, and stop doing them going forward. We had multiple things in progress. We pulled these publications back, edited them, and, you know, really fixed it so that we were telling the stories from a more ethical point of view. And then the other piece is really getting more intentional about our conversations with students before connecting them with donors. And I've just been working on this week. We have a scholarship program for first generation students, and they raised their hand and said, you know, we feel like we're being kind of trotted out to committees and boards and donor meetings, and we're not fans of it. And it was a thing of beauty that they let us know, because truth be told, we might have continued doing it. But instead, what we were able to do is take like 20 steps back, learn from the students what does work for them, when and if they're going to be part of a committee meeting or a board meeting, when and if they're going to meet their donors, what's comfortable, you know, what is the setup, what is the room, what is the, like, everything about it, what works for them versus our standard template, right, for connecting our donors with our students. And so it's just a big shift in the way we've been doing business. And it seems so obvious, you know, in retrospect, it seems so obvious, but, you know, it wasn't. And now we can change it, which I think development officers have a position of power, and we have enough tendrils throughout our institutions that we can identify opportunities to do a better job of managing that power imbalance between donors and beneficiaries.
Yeah, I sort of feel, I mean, by definition, I'm sure each student gets to have his or her own opinion about what works, but I am sort of curious, like from a granular level, like what is the feedback that you're getting?
What is the feedback from the students or from? Okay, so one
more of and less of.
Yes. So what they want more of is they appreciate the opportunity to share the impact of the scholarship more so than effusing gratitude. They are grateful, but the difference between a thank you letter and talking about the impact of the scholarship, you know, a short bio is preferable to an effusive letter just demonstrating and articulating levels of gratitude that we as development officers want them to demonstrate, and donors probably, you know, enjoy that even more. Well, some, depending on the personality type. So we learned that students are interested in talking about themselves in different ways. We also learned that this group of students that I'm referring to, because I don't want to generalize too much, would very much prefer for there to be multiple students in the room when meeting with donors. They would like to do these in group settings, and that's their comfort level with that. They also would like to know ahead of time, what are we going to talk about? Like, really, what are the questions that I'm going to be asked? And also, they want food. We do have a lot of students with food insecurity at Oregon State, and being able to make that part of the experience is actually important. Yeah. And that's an easy fix, right? We might have done it anyway, but now we're I'm working on a get together, and I'm just making sure that it's not at 10:30. You know, it's at lunchtime.
Right.
So we can feed them. Those are some examples.
I love that those are great. I love that you're pointing to this dynamic of sort of the institution, the donors, and the beneficiaries.
Yeah.
And the fundraiser is in the middle of all that.
Yeah.
And so if there isn't someone like you, Anne, who has an awareness of these dynamics, then you're on autopilot.
Yes.
That's not the sense that I get from you. So what advice might you have for other leaders out there who are aware that these are tricky conversations? They are, leaders need to be aware of the power dynamics involved. So where's your thinking on that right now?
It's a wonderful question. Thank you for asking it. Here's where I am right now with it. And it's very pragmatic. I would love to say something loftier, but I think it boils down to leading from where you are. I don't think that waiting for the overall institution to change all of our operations, you know, how we do donor relations, how we do stewardship, I don't think that it's necessary to wait for all the systems to catch up. If we did, we wouldn't have institutional racism. You know, there are lots of things in our society that we can handle. We can make an impact on a granular level from our own space, our own position. And so my advice would be to tackle this at your own level where you are with the power that you legitimately have, and to really own that and do the best you can in your space. What I have seen is that as I've been, you know, calling these things into question a little bit, just taking that step back, other colleagues are paying attention to, okay, all right, maybe we should ask the students how they feel. Okay, that's a first step. Maybe we should make sure that when the scholarship is allocated, it's utterly clear that they do not need to participate in particular stewardship activities, that it won't impact the eligibility for the scholarship. So as you lead from where you are, I think you'd be surprised at how other people pick up on it. And that's been my approach. I know that I'm not going to change it overnight from the top down, David.
Mean to say, it's kind of radical now, Anne, you mean to say that the role of a fundraising leader is not all about the metrics and hitting the goals?
It's a provocative one. Yes, of course.
I don't think the audience is going to get this at a case conference, are they?
No, and I will say that this is this is a perfect example of we measure X and we hope for Y. We measure metrics and we hope that all these other things fall into place, right? We hope.
But we're not encouraging the audience to smoke opium, right? When that's not what we're here for.
No.
So what would you give them if you were to give them something to actually not smoke opium and be practical and pragmatic about what you're sharing here? What might you invite them to try?
So what I would invite them to try is, first of all, something that comes from a very personal place as a leader of being very comfortable in your own convictions, knowing that you're going to stay, you know, in keeping with the values of the organization that you work for. But within that and underneath that overarching, you know, kind of guiding light, you do have flexibility. You do have autonomy to bring your own perspective into things, especially with your teams. And I think that when we as leaders drop our own shoulders, drop our own guards, it creates a space for colleagues to begin to share their own perspective on it. Without sharing that, I mean, my experience thus far has been, if folks can't talk about it, they can't change it. And so by starting from that place of, we are a group who talks about, you know, power imbalances. We are a group who are not going to pretend that they don't exist. Because I do think there's I want to use a word, but I do think that we're somewhat delusional about this in our field. We act like the power imbalance doesn't exist, but it totally exists. We just don't talk about it. So I think when leaders address it head on and they create a space for people to be able to talk about it that's safe, I think that's a really good first step. Does that answer the question, David? Do you have a follow-up?
Oh, I think you've given the audience a huge challenge. So yeah. Thank you for that.
Yeah,
it is a big challenge. And I'll say that one of the first times that I had to be really real, To be honest, I didn't have a choice because I was feeling so raw about there are so many bumps in the road, right? In the extent of a career. And we had a big bump in the road. And I was, you know, I woke up in the morning and I started calling mentors at 7 o'clock in the morning saying, I don't know how to handle this. I'm a wreck. And we've got staff meetings and we've got talking points and we've got, you know, people are upset. People are, you know, beside themselves. People aren't sleeping. How do I do this when I feel so incredibly raw? And the way I showed up was I got my act together. It wasn't a complete mess, right? But I did let people know and see that I too was struggling with it and that I didn't want them to pretend that they weren't. And I couldn't do it either. So that's a little nugget that I'll share is that I do think it can be really challenging, but also I'll tell you on the other side of it, I felt so much healthier. Yeah. It was healing for me as much as it was for my staff.
Yes. And I think, thank you for sharing that. I think, you know, raw and real can win the day for sure. And what I hear you saying is that there is wiggle room to do that while still staying aligned, you know, that it doesn't have to be an act of rebellion or rogue, that, you know, that you've found a sweet spot. So thank you. Thank you so much. So this podcast is brought to you by Fundraising Leadership. We provide unique coaching and training programs that powerfully transform how you work in order to get results. Please subscribe. If you haven't already, you can find us on iTunes, Google Podcasts, Amazon Music Podcasts, and Spotify. And if you enjoy the show, please rate and review us so others can find us. We don't have a specific resource this week, but please do check out our website if your team needs some help being able to create safety for authentic conversations. We are on the job at Fundraising Leadership, so please check us out. Now go put it into practice.